Hello, I'm Kathleen Dunn on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio, and Lynn Shearer is our guest this hour. I never thought anybody could write such a fascinating book about swimming, and she has done it. I had no idea of all of the history of this sport, and I'm glad she has written this. Swim, Why We Love the Water is the name of the book. I'm also a swimmer. It's the only sport I know how to do. So I've been doing it for years and years and years. And so I particularly found this fascinating. But also for those of you who may not swim, this hour could inspire you to become a swimmer. Lynn, many of you I'm sure are familiar with her. A longtime correspondent for ABC News, many years as a reporter for 2020. She is a Peabody Award winner. She is the author of 5 books, including the one that we're talking about this hour. And she has done some very interesting, long, and somewhat dangerous swims. She cannot resist a body of water, be it a pool or an outdoor body of water. She's been swimming all over the world, and we're going to have some fun. So all of you swimmers, call in, please. Or those of you who would love to swim but you're just afraid, call in, please. Here's our phone number, 800-486-8655. 800-486-8655. The email is talk@wpr.org. Hello, Lynn. Thank you so much for being with us.
Hi, Kathleen. I'm thrilled to be with you. I always like talking to other swimmers, and I'm so delighted that you mentioned the fact that if someone's listening who's not a swimmer, just keep listening. We're going to get you there.
Yes, there's even a part of the book where you tell people about this egg story. We'll hold it off until later to learn that you are buoyant. You know, I'm just so glad you wrote this book because I've been swimming, as I said, for years and years, thanks to my father, who was a swimmer. And we lived in Chicago, and we moved to the suburbs to, you know, one of these communities where it was all farmland then, and every third house kind of looked alike. And he started a Lions Club, and by golly, the first thing he did was build a swimming pool in this little town. God bless him, and I thank him every day that I've been swimming since, and it's been many, many years. For many of us, it's really something we have to do in our lives, isn't it?
I think it is. You know, like you, I mean, I learned to swim as a toddler, and I learned to swim because my parents owned a children's camp in the mountains in Pennsylvania, in the Poconos. And when I was too little to be in a cabin with other children, I would go hang out by the side of the lake and watch frogs swim. And I thought that what they did with their legs was just the coolest thing I'd ever seen. And by the way, I have a really good frog kick. Really, really good. For me, you know, swimming was as... It's just always been something you did. I'm reasonably athletic. I've done all sorts of sports, but swimming just felt like the right thing to do. I just love the feeling of the water on my body.
Mm-hmm. And you write early in the book about the health benefits of swimming. They do appear to be, you can't really lose a lot of weight swimming, but the health benefits for your heart are quite substantial.
It's true. It's, you know, when you're in the water, you feel ageless and weightless.
Yes.
And that's the beginning of it. And it's just so good for your cardiovascular system, for your lungs, for your pulmonary system. It exercises every major muscle group in the body. And the really important thing, Kathleen, I think for people to understand is you don't need to have one of those perfect inverted V-shaped bodies like the elite athletes have. And it's very possible you're never going to have a body like that. What you need to be is fit. You don't need to be a scrawn. You don't need to be twig thin. But this will keep you fit, and that's the good thing, and that's what we're all aiming for these days.
Mm-hmm. Now, tell me about where you've been swimming. You're like me. When I think about Milwaukee, I know almost every swimming hole in this whole community. I've been to every single one. And you have been really all over the world, and you've done some fairly dangerous swimming.
Well, only once, and I don't know how dangerous it was. I signed up for this. I got the contract to write this book, and I really wanted to write about swimming because it is one of my passions. And I was essentially a lazy lap swimmer when I signed up to do this book. And yes, I have swum in some very interesting places. I have swum in a beautiful infinity edge pool in Thailand. Mm. I have swum in a beautiful turquoise pool in the middle of the desert in Australia. I have swum in wonderful freshwater lakes all over the world. And that's because everywhere I go, I would just seek out a place to swim. And by the way, you know, you mentioned that I had that long career at ABC News. When I used to cover the space program, when I would be in Texas while the shuttle was orbiting the Earth, I would be in the pool orbiting the pool. That was my way of keeping up. But when I decided to do the book, I thought I needed a personal challenge and then I needed to do some big swim. So I signed up to swim in what turns out to be a race, a big international race, in the body of water that is called the Hellespont. Today it's called the Dardanelles, an iconic historic body of water separating Europe from Asia and Western Turkey. And this was a challenge, definitely a challenge for me. But I then signed up for U.S. Masters Swimming, this wonderful organization where you can do workouts and drills. And I just pushed and pushed and pushed myself so that I would be ready for my August swim, which mm-hmm. I did.
Mm. And you write about the history of people who have done this. My concern during that, we had Diana Nyad on a few months ago talking about her attempt, Cuba to Florida, and all of these jellyfish stings that really ravaged her body. Weren't you worried about something like that? Aren't people who do these channel swims worried they're going to get destroyed by jellyfish?
I was terrified, Kathleen. I was absolutely terrified, especially because Diana had just had her, and Diana's in the book, of course, but Diana had just had her attack by the Portuguese man of war, two of them, as she had tried her swim, and it nearly killed her. I mean, she literally had trouble breathing, and I knew how horrible jellyfish stings can be, and we all knew, that is to say, those of us doing this race, because we all talked ahead of time, we all knew that there were reports of many jellyfish in that particular body of water in the Hellespont. The good news is that on the day that I swam, the water was very calm. And yes, I did run into jellyfish. And in fact, at one point I was, you know, swimming the crawl and I reached out and my hand struck this. All I can tell you is it felt like dessert, right? It was like jello. And I looked up and I had goggles on, obviously, and there were a couple of giant jellyfish. Luckily, they ran away from me. They just scooted away. They did not have tentacles. They were not stingers. And I wound up seeing quite a number of them as I crossed, and I sort of got mesmerized by them. They're very beautiful because of the way they move, and they were transparent, but nobody bothered me, I'm happy to say. So, yes, I was scared of jellyfish, and thank goodness Poseidon, the sea god, was looking out for me that day.
Are you going to do that kind of swim again?
I'm looking for another one. I'm very particular. I need warm water. I would never even think about the channel. It's way too long for me. Of course, that's 21 miles. I wound up swimming about 4 miles in my swim. And the currents are awfully strong. I'm a strong swimmer, but I don't think I'm powerful enough to do that. And the water's freezing. Mm-hmm. I don't want to swim in cold water. I need warm water. So, yes, I'm looking for another one.
Let's talk about swimmers in history and start with a story which is highly amusing of John Quincy Adams. Which we don't know if it's true or not. It's a great story.
No. All true.
It is true.
Yeah. In fact, you know, you'll notice there's a section in my book where I talk about myths. This is not a myth. There is truth that John Quincy Adams used to skinny dip in the Potomac regularly when he was president of the United States. And one day he went in for his regular swim with his valet, and he did not remove his clothes, which actually turned out to be a mistake, because on that day, the two of them were in a little boat crossing the Potomac. They were going to swim back, and President Adams had his clothes on, and a sudden squall came about, and it tipped the boat over, and they wound up in the water, and the president nearly drowned because his clothes weighed him down. And as you can well imagine, in those days, clothes were much more voluminous than they are today. Luckily, he was a very strong swimmer. He got out of his clothes. They got to the other side. He gave his clothes to his valet, who, by the way, was not encumbered by clothing, gave his clothes to him, Mr. Giusta, and the valet went back to the White House and brought back a carriage to bring the president back home. But for like, you know, an hour, several hours, the president of the United States sat on a rock on the other side of the Potomac, stark naked, waiting for transportation back to the White House. So Mrs. Adams was not amused, and he never did that swim again.
What a story that is.
Now, and it's a true story.
That's great.
The way we know it's a true story is that John Quincy Adams wrote about it in his diary. So there it is. Yeah.
There used to be a pool. Is there no longer a pool in the White House?
The White House indoor swimming pool was erected during President Franklin Delano Roosevelt's administration, 1933. And that, of course, was because FDR had polio, was bound to a wheelchair. But when he was in the pool, he actually could move. And it was one of the only forms of physical exercise he could get. So it was a blessing for him. 3 decades later, the pool was bricked up by none other than Richard M. Nixon, in order to build, are you ready for this, a press room.
Oh, my goodness.
Kind of ironic.
Yes, very.
Yeah, amazing. And here's the rest of the story. Today, the pool is still bricked up, and the press room is indeed on top of it. And you know the end of the press room where the podium is and where the press secretary lots of administration officials often speak to us? That's located directly over, ta-dum, the deep end.
That's a great story.
So swimming, as far as I'm concerned, is indeed a metaphor for life.
You remind us in the book of the pictures of Richard Nixon, which come to mind so easily, walking down the beach in his shoes and his, and we're not just talking tennis shoes, we're talking fancy shoes and right. socks. There's a president who could have used a little swimming, right?
Yeah, there's a man who, for all of the things that he could do quite spectacularly well, Richard Nixon did not seem particularly comfortable in his own body, and that was one example. When you're on the beach, you really don't need socks and shoes.
No, you sure don't.
By the way, we've had extremely athletic presidents in the modern era. There is a White House outdoor pool now, which was commissioned by Gerald Ford, who, of course, was a very athletic man. And our current president, Barack Obama, very athletic and famously swam in Hawaii. Do you remember that headline?
Sure.
And unfortunately for the White House, from their perspective, there were all sorts of pictures right after he was elected, before he was inaugurated, of the president's very buff body coming out of the water. And the headlines, the tabloids had headlines like Buff Bam. And ready for this one? Spectacular president.
Oh, no.
Yeah, but he's a swimmer. Isn't that nice to know?
That is. That's great to know. I'll think of him differently. He is a swimmer. There's also this, and this was totally new to me, that there was a very strong aquatic culture of African Americans that was destroyed in this country. There's a as this whole episode, this whole long history of segregation and has been so damaging to us, it also kept African Americans from becoming swimmers. And they had been more than Caucasian culture? What's the story?
Indeed. Well, for one thing, Western Europe and then the United States came to swimming long after many native peoples already swam quite professionally and quite elegantly. There are many reports of Westerners visiting South Sea Islands, for example, and seeing that, of course, they would swim. It's right, you know, that's what they do. Native Americans, American Indians were very, very accomplished swimmers. And the Western world came a little late to it, but they finally got there. And then there are many, many reports of white slave owners, I'm sorry to say, being rescued from shipwrecks by their African slaves, because they also knew how to swim from the time they were born, because many of them grew up right near a river, right near the ocean, whatever. But this culture was indeed destroyed during the very shameful periods in our history of segregation and racial bias. And when integration happened, the last places to be integrated during the, you know, starting, say, in the 30s, 40s, 50s, and up through the 80s, well, 70s, the last places to be integrated were swimming pools. And in fact, many public swimming pools and private ones were closed down rather than integrate. It's shameful. It's a shameful part of our history, and I'm happy to say that so much of it is already beyond us. But yes, that destroyed the ability of minority communities to learn how to swim, to exercise properly. Lots of silly myths arose that it was not possible, that their bodies were different. all nonsense, total nonsense.
Yeah. I wonder what the state is of public swimming pools now, particularly in big cities. We used to have a lot of them here in Milwaukee, and many have closed over the years because of dwindling resources and not as many people actually swimming. What is the state of swimming in urban America?
Not good, I'm sorry to say. It's coming back a little bit. And as you well know, of course, there are public pools. Here in New York, we have outdoor public pools. And we also, in the summer here in New York, have a sort of a new idea, which is hearkening back to the old days, which is a floating swimming pool in the rivers, which is quite fabulous. This is what they used to do in Europe all the time. In fact, the first swimming pools were these floating barges that would have a pool on top of them, which, you know, within them that you could swim in. But here's what's happened, is that we used to be a country and a society that adored swimming. You know, during the 20s and 30s and 40s and 50s in this country, aquacades, which were this form of outside entertainment where you would pay money and go to watch people, very athletic people, swim and do a kind of water ballet. Mm-hmm. That was very popular. We all went to the movies to watch Johnny Weissmuller and Esther Williams, two serious swimmers who became movie stars, and we paid money to do this. And today what we have is a lot of public pools have been converted to racing pools so that there's only lanes so that racers can do their laps or lap swimmers can do their laps. There's hardly anywhere where you can just go in and splash around. And the other development has been these water parks. And on the one hand, I think the water parks are a great idea because it gets people out and into the water. But what do? They slide down a slide. They ride down a whirlpool kind of thing. And they're not actually swimming. So I'm one of those people that hopes we get a revival of the swimming culture and we get back to just regular old swimming.
Well, you come to Milwaukee. I got a great spot right in the city where they have one of those. And I must say I'm kind of a fan of the lazy river on a tube for a while. Then I go down the water slide. But they also have lap swimming. So it's completely outside. It's right in the city. And it is heated, if you can
believe
it.
I'll be there, Kathleen.
You will?
I'll be there.
All right.
Yeah, sure.
All right. Come on. Well,
Next time, please. When I'm in the neighborhood, I'll do it. Or if I have an excuse, I'll just come out and do it.
Good.
Any great place to swim lures me.
I think you will like it because it's right in the city too, which is unusual.
What's it called?
It's the Dave Schultz Aquatic Center. He used to be our county executive many years ago, and he got a movement going to build this, you know, in the city. And he was the first. He was a very large man. Unfortunately, he died a couple of years ago. But he went down the slide, many pounds of him, 350 or something, and people got enthused about this. It's still not attracting a whole lot of people, though, and it's such a marvelous place. It's just,
thanks to Dave. I'll be there.
All right. Good. All right. We'll have some fun. Let's welcome phone calls. We'll do that in just one moment. Our phone number is 800-486-8655. 800-486-8655. Our email is talk@wpr.org. And let's talk to swimmers. And, you know, I'd really like to have a call because Lynn is going to convince you to try this if you are not a swimmer, that it's not. Everybody can do this. I've talked to a lot of people who say, I just can't swim, I sink. You can swim. We can all swim. And so we're talking about swimming. Her book is Swim, Why We Love the Water, and we'll be with your calls momentarily. I'm Kathleen Dunn on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. We go to phone calls now, starting with Karen in Madison. Hi, Karen.
Hi.
Hi. Go right ahead, Karen.
Oh, sorry. I didn't hear you. I had the radio off. I just wanted to comment on everything that has been said so far is just the joy of swimming. As a person with a disability, I use an electric wheelchair now. I used to use a manual chair. But what I know for myself, as well as many other people, is the freedom of being buoyant in the water. And it is just an enormously awesome feeling. And in the past, I used to swim for exercise and do laps and all that, and it was just awesome. And now, although my disability is much worse than it used to be, I am not able to swim like I used to, but I still make every effort. And it's an enormous amount of effort to get to a pool, and it has to be accessible. It has to be warm. I know what warm means, and the pool I swim at is 93 degrees.
Oh, so my.
Nice. And, I mean, yeah, it's a therapy pool, but still. I just have to tell you this really cool story. I was swimming one day with my attendant, and this lifeguard, she commented to my attendant, the person helping me, she says, "Oh, my God, that woman must be in bliss." Because the facial expression of her thing is the best thing I've ever seen. And it's really true, because people that can get off their back, I mean, I'm sitting in a wheelchair, it's hard on the spine, and it's enormously beneficial. And it's just really cool to know that the president had a pool, and it was the president with a disability.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Lynn.
Here too, because I know what the feeling is. You know, the skin is our largest organ. So when we're in the water, every part of it is being touched and embraced by the water. And we're ageless in the pool, and we're weightless in the pool. And I know exactly what you're talking about. And I just want to add also, Kathleen, I've had a number of emails and communications on our webpage for the book, our Facebook webpage, that from people with Parkinson's, with MS, and various other disabilities who, when they get into the pool, are totally liberated from that wheelchair, from that sense of being bound to something. So thank you for the call, and I hope you will keep swimming.
Oh, I think she will. It gives her bliss. You broke your kneecap. Is that what got you swimming more regularly?
It did, because I broke my kneecap, gee, it must have been 30-some years ago, more, about 40 years ago, and I was in a full leg cast for 10 weeks, and when my cast came off, my quadriceps, the muscle from the top of your knee to the bottom top of your thigh, was totally withered, totally, totally withered. And part of my therapy was swimming. Now, as I say, I'd always been a swimmer. I'd never really done regular laps, and my therapist got me in the pool, and she just gave me a number. She said, 30 minutes. I want you to do 30 minutes a day. And I started out with a flutter board, with a kickboard, and I could barely make it down the pool. And over time, I strengthened my leg, and I so loved being in the water and was so afraid of my quadriceps going away again that I just kept it up. Yeah. Mm.
So what is the best advice? Is it 30 minutes a day or 20 minutes a day? Is it a half mile? Is it a quarter mile? What's best for your body?
I think it is depending on your body and what you can handle. And I know from my experience that the more I do, the longer I want to swim. I used to do 30. I'm now not happy unless I do an hour.
You do? Good for
yeah,
you.
Yeah. But I don't do it every single day. In the summer, I do it every single day. But I need that hour. Otherwise, I feel as if I've shortchanged my body and myself. And I like that hour in the pool. And it's also, you know what it is? It's an hour away from voices. It's an hour away from the hum of civilization. It's an hour away from my BlackBerry and my computer.
Right.
And I like that quite a lot.
Yeah. We'll talk about music and swimming, because you have an interesting thing of some people who listen or sing songs, Diana Nyad and Mark Phelps and others. We'll talk about that. Remind me. John in Lake Geneva. Hi.
Hi. This is John. How are you guys?
Good, John. How are you?
Hi, John.
Good. It's just nice to hear this banter about swimming, because I have some very fond memories. My mother and father met in a swimming pool in 1931. My mother was the lifeguard, and my dad was practicing diving. So
love it.
As a young man, we still have a summer home in Door County, so I cannot ever remember learning how to swim.
It's you just
something
did it.
I've always known. It's just nice to hear you guys talk about it in a positive fashion.
I love the fact that your mother was the lifeguard, you know. You mentioned music, Kathleen. One of the chapters in the book is I call The Art of Swimming, in which I talk about how swimming is reflected in paintings and poetry and music. And around the turn of the last century, when ocean swimming became very popular on the East and West Coast, there were a number of kind of parlor music, popular songs written about swimming, and they all rhymed beach, peach, teach, and all the teaching was generally done by men. Of course, it was the handsome Brave Lifesaver. That's the name of one of the songs. But there is one that I love where it's the girl who's the great swimmer and not the guy, and she's teaching him how to swim. And I love that around 1910, this was an issue worth singing about. So good to you to have that your mother was the lifeguard. Love that.
Yeah, I remember vividly, maybe because I'm a swimmer, but interviewing President Ronald Reagan's son. Maybe you've read that in his book, and he has a big chapter about the president in his earlier teenage years being a lifeguard at this river.
Right.
And he really believed that that helped formulate who he was as a human being and ultimately who he was as a president, that he loved that job more than any other jobs because he could be on the lookout for people who were in need. He was strong. He was healthy. He could swim a long ways. I just thought that was so interesting. I've always thought of President Reagan as a swimmer ever since that interview.
Well, you know, it's interesting because what that does is it bears the truth of the concept that swimming is not only so that you can learn to save yourself from drowning or to give yourself enjoyment. It's also a metaphor for life. It is a life lesson.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, it's in the Talmud, in the Jewish Talmud.
Yes,
there's a thing
that
says,
either.
Right, that a Jewish man, a father, is meant to teach his son, you know, the Torah, this and that, and teach him how to swim. And one rabbi I spoke with interpreted that as meaning not only was it to save them from drowning, because shipwrecks were very common around the time that that was written, but also as a life lesson, as a way of saving yourself in the world and being self-sustaining and being independent.
Hmm.
And there is also, a Muslim cleric has written the exact same thing for Muslims, to teach your son, and swimming is throughout the Bible as well. It's one of these things that is good for your brain and good for your soul, and you get a confidence from it that you don't get from many other activities.
Hmm. Well, that's interesting. I wonder if it explains in some ways why the Jewish Community Center in Milwaukee has one of the only non-chlorinated pools and very extensive swimming classes. It
well,
must
I,
be.
I
Let's
hope
go to that.
That they're all reading the Talmud. I wonder if they are or not, but good for them. And you know, I also just spoke with someone who's the head of a wonderful foundation here in the New York area that takes children to summer camp from inner city areas. And these are kids that would never have an opportunity either to learn to swim or to be in a pool where there's just to have fun. And she says that when these children learn to swim, it gives them such self-confidence, and it really changes their outlook on life,
mm-hmm.
that they feel they can conquer other things besides just getting to the other mm-hmm. end of the pool. So what a wonderful thing to take from swimming.
I was also, you may have been done this too, I was a lifeguard for years when I was in college and in high school. What a great way it was to save money for college. It was a great job, and people aren't doing it as much because lifeguard jobs go unfilled in this community, and it's a perfect thing for a young person to make some money, and it pays fairly well.
Well, yeah, I did it in college to earn money while I was in college as well. But I will tell you, I've spent some time on the eastern end of Long Island in New York. And out there, I write about it in the book, there's a wonderful junior lifeguarding program, which is for local and visiting kids. And it teaches them how to survive and how to help other people in the ocean. And these kids get a fabulous lesson. And it's not the only course like it in the country.
Mm-hmm.
These kids then go on, of course, many of them, to become the real lifeguards on the beaches out there. And it's just a wonderful program. And I know there are some like it in California, certainly on the coast. I don't know how many there are in local swimming pools. But I think it's a great idea. I think all children should have to learn to swim when they're little, because I think it's one of those skills that you just need in life.
Yeah. Amy in Madison. Hi, Amy.
Hi. I'm enjoying your show. I especially enjoyed the comments you made about the Talmud. I had no idea about that. So I learned how to swim when I was a kid, and I swam in high school, and I was never very fast, but I enjoyed it. And then as an adult, I was coaching for a swim team, and the head coach sent me to a total immersion mm-hmm. clinic. And I'm wondering if you could talk a bit about kind of that different style that allows adults to swim more easily and be more slippery in the water? Because I think a lot of adults don't swim because it's so hard.
Right. Thank you for bringing that up. And let me just ask you this. Do you find that you're swimming better because of the total immersion courses that you took?
You know, I'm not a whole lot faster, maybe a little faster, but it's just so much more enjoyable.
It's interesting. I do a whole section, and I have a whole section in the book about total immersion, and I did an interview with Terry Laughlin, who, of course, runs it, and or ran it, and I went up to his indoor pool, and he gave me a very generous hour of his time and showed me what the technique is. Total immersion is a slightly different approach to swimming, and it's mostly for adults rather than children. It's for people who have not felt comfortable in the water, and what he emphasizes is, as you say, feeling slippery in the water. It's about streamlining your body. It's about understanding that getting balance while you're in the water and thinking about your core and thinking about slipping through the water rather than beating through the water will make you more comfortable. And there are testimonials from many, many people who have found this a wonderful way to learn. Mm-hmm. And I really do commend it. It is different. It's a different style from people who are marathoners, from people who are competitive swimmers. There's much less emphasis on power and on stroking than there is on form and balance. But in the long run, I think the goal is exactly the same, which is to make people feel comfortable in the water. Mm-hmm. And I sort of took what I got from Terry and what I've gotten from other coaches, because I'm always working to improve my stroke, and put them together. And I think they're great lessons for everybody.
Great. Thank you.
Thanks, Amy, so much. All right. Here's a Facebook message from somebody who wants to learn to swim. Yeah, this is from Rick from Eau Claire. 2 years ago, I got into running after hating it my whole life. Now I'm hooked and I run all the time, doing 10Ks and getting ready to tackle a half marathon this year. Another goal, to eventually do a triathlon, but the swim is what I'm apprehensive about. How does one start from square one in regards to becoming a swimmer?
Well, you know, the interesting thing is that it is the triathletes who are largely driving the increase in swimming lessons these days.
Oh.
Because, like him, a lot of triathletes, wannabe triathletes, have the cycling part and they have the running part, and they've really just never been swimmers, just like him. And the answer, well, you know, you want me to do Ben Franklin. Maybe, why don't you, Kathleen, do you want to read a little section of that, and then I'll explain. Let me first set it up by saying that Benjamin Franklin, our Benjamin Franklin, was an expert swimmer.
Yes.
And in the early 1800s, it was very unusual for Americans to swim. He had followed lessons in a book and became quite a good swimmer. And he actually wrote some advice on how to swim. And Kathleen, do you want to do some of that?
Well, he said, is this the one where he said he wrote that swimming cured everything from diarrhea? I speak from my own experience to his insomnia. I agree with him on that. Which is very true. I probably don't.
This is the one about the egg?
Oh, no, no. Oh, yeah. Let me find that. Where the heck is it? Did I write down? What page is it on?
Goodness. Now, I don't have the book in front of
me,
and I can't tell you.
All right.
But let me, while you're looking for it, let me point out the secret here is buoyancy.
Right.
It is all about buoyancy. Buoyancy is that wonderful miracle of physics that keeps us afloat. And when you get in the water, you really cannot sink under normal circumstances. And Ben Franklin understood that, and he urged people to, and the way you prove this, by the way, try to sit at the bottom of a swimming pool. Try to sit at the bottom of your favorite. You can't do it.
No, you can't.
You will
do it.
Pop right up.
Yeah.
And Ben Franklin, have you found it?
I found
Ben
it. Yeah.
Okay. Maybe you could just.
So here's what he used buoyancy. He said you won't be a swimmer until you place confidence in the power of the water to support you. He told this friend who didn't swim, in a ponderous stream where the water gradually deepens, walk in up to your chest and then turn to face the shore. Next, toss a boiled egg into the water toward the shore, and when it sinks, dive in and try to grab it. You will find, Dr. Franklin writes, that the water buoys you up against your inclination, that it is not so easy a thing to sink as you imagined, that you cannot but by active force get down to the egg. Thus you feel the power of the water to support you, and you learn to confide in that power. You learn.
And then you get to eat the egg.
You get to eat the egg.
Which is salted because, you know, it's been in the water. But the truth is, He wrote that to say to people, you're not going to sink under normal circumstances. We're not talking about a storm. We're not talking about a shipwreck.
Right, right.
We're not talking about, although a shipwreck actually might be part of it, we're not talking about the fact that you might be injured. You're going to float, and the egg teaches you that. And the real answer, I would say, is hire a coach. Take a few lessons. You can probably do it by yourself, but how much smarter to get into a class. Go to your local Y, your local rec center, and get into a class, take a few lessons, and then you're going to be able to learn a lot of it on your own.
Yeah.
Many, many adults are doing this now as grown-ups. You don't have to be 4 years old to learn how to swim.
Right. Connie in Middleton. Hi.
Hi. I have a funny little story. I grew up in Lexington, Massachusetts, and there they had, from way back in, I presume it's the 20s, because it was the 30s when I was swimming there, they had an outdoor swimming pool, and you couldn't go there just for recreation. You had to go there and take lessons, and you started out as a sinker, and then when you learned to float, you were a polywog, and so forth and so on. And it was really a great pool. You'd have to be in the class for part of the program, and then you could have a little time for free swimming. And it was cold water. But I certainly learned there and eventually became an instructor during the summers when I was in college. But one of my favorite memories is of my mother, who never learned to swim. And that was in the days when she had her hair set once a week. And she certainly wasn't going to go in and get her hair messed up.
Right.
And here I was, an instructor in this pool. And it was very embarrassing to me. And I thought it was awful for her to go on cruises and not know how to swim in case the boat sank. But anyway, one day I persuaded her to go the next day to the adult swimming class in our pool. And she finally promised, all right, she would do it. Well, it turned out the next day was rainy and the pool was closed.
Aww.
And my mother was so relieved. She said she had stayed awake half the night wondering what she was going to do if she had to go and swim under my instruction in the pool. And she was so glad when it rained and she didn't have to go, and she never promised again to do it.
Sorry. That's a sad ending, but I'm here to say she probably would have learned. And let me pick up on one of the things you mentioned, because hair is a very important thing
that.
To discuss
yes.
when we
yes.
talk about swimming. And hair is indeed a reason why many women do not swim.
Mm-hmm.
And I understand. Believe me, I understand. Either because of the color or because of you've just gotten it done or it's just too much effort. I get it. I really get it. Here's what I do want to say. Don't expect a bathing cap to keep your hair dry. That is not what bathing caps are for. There is no bathing cap on the planet that will keep your hair dry. Bathing caps are to keep your hair out of your eyes, out of the drain of the pool, and to make you more streamlined. I do have an image in the book of a bathing cap that was invented around the turn of the century by a woman who had a double seal on it, which she claims would have kept your hair dry. As far as I know, it was never manufactured. So if somebody wants to try to make some money, I think there is a lot of money to be made in a bathing cap.
Yes,
that will
there
keep
is.
Your hair dry.
Yes, there is.
But beyond that, I want to say, get over it. Get into the pool. Get into the ocean. Don't worry about your hair.
Right. But I see her point. Women used to. She's right. Go to the beauty parlor. And once my mom did that, too. Got it all ratted and hairspray. And that's the way it was.
Excuse me.
For a week.
I do it, too. You know, there are one or two days when I've just gotten my hair blown out when I'm not interested in starting from scratch. But my body wins out most of the time.
Right. Yeah.
And says, get me in the water. Get me in the water.
Right. If you do it regularly, you just have to go, don't you, Lynn? You just have to go to the pool.
Gotta go to the pool. Yeah, if your body will tell you what it wants, and my body tells me it wants to swim.
Mm-hmm.
And my kids sort of get out of the way when I say that, and they actually know that I will emerge from the pool a much kinder, gentler person.
It's a good way to put it. Thanks, Connie, very much. Joan in Milwaukee.
Hello. For people in Milwaukee who maybe are in their 70s or 80s, they might remember back in Milwaukee when there were many, many natatoriums.
Yes.
And they were swimming areas. And my husband went to Shorewood High School because they had a swimming pool, mm-hmm. rather than going to university school or some other school. and they had a great coach, Pete Colosimo, and he said, well, why don't you go to Dartmouth on a swimming
scholarship?
Yeah, and he did. But when we were going to be married, my mother-in-law said to me, she said, well, now that you're getting married, you certainly will give up teaching and television. And I said, well, why? And she said, well, when I married Grampy, I gave up going to the Olympics. You don't argue with your future mother-in-law, but when she
died... Oh, my God. Wow. Was she really...
In her scrapbooks, Helen Thompson wins international swim meet. Helen Thompson marries E.F. Schmidt instead of going to the Olympics.
Oh, my goodness.
Wow, that's something to give up. You know, it just also reminds me, thank you for sharing that story. It reminds me also about, you know, Esther Williams, our divine Esther Williams. I'm one of those little girls that wanted to be Esther Williams, not the least of which she could swim and her hair never got messed up, which I could never figure out. But Esther Williams was a champion swimmer as a high school student in Los Angeles. And would have gone to the Olympics, but in 1940, which would have been her Olympics, and she certainly would have qualified, that was the year the Olympics were canceled because of World War II. Mm. So many sacrifices because of the Olympics. It's so interesting.
Oh, that's quite a story, Joan. Thank you. Here's an email from Jean in Appleton. I'm an 83-year-old female who's been swimming all my life, except for the past month. I just resumed daily swims after a back spasm problem. I can't wait to get back in the groove. I grew up on the southwest coast of England. The swimming season began when the lifeguard raised the blue flag on the beach, signifying 58 degree water temperature. And that was warm enough for hardy swimmers. What a memory, huh?
What a memory, and what a great thing to have done. You know, also, Kathleen, I was just in California. And I was in San Francisco, where there is a group of very hardy swimmers who swim in San Francisco Bay all year long. And a group of them, before I spoke and before I was doing a book signing, had just come out of the, ready for this, 53-degree water.
Oh.
You know, there are amazing people there. Yeah, me neither.
Mm. Oh, no, it's
got to
be warm.
It's supposed to. And it's also really good for you, it turns out, swimming in cold water. You know, there used to be something called the cold water cure. And around, the late 1800s, people, certainly on the East Coast, went to these cold water cure resorts where all of their ailments, remember, chilblains, things like that, mm-hmm. would go away when you did the cold water cure. So there's probably something to it.
Mm. Except that it's one of the problems I have with swimming in the winter, because it's that first, it's the water always feels colder, and it's the first, you know you're going to be okay, but you can work yourself up into, I'm going to get in this water and I'm going to be cold for maybe a minute until I get working here. And it's hard. It's a hard thing to do.
Right. So imagine when that other poor woman's mother was thinking about swimming lessons for the whole time. It wasn't about cold. It was just about getting in the water.
Exactly.
I understand the fear. I totally understand it. And what I hope somebody listening who might be a little afraid might get out of this is there's nothing to be afraid of. And it's just a magical experience to be in the water.
That's very good. There's nothing to be afraid of. There's nothing to be afraid of. And once you learn it, it will be wonderful.
And listen to all these people calling in with such great memories of it. You know, you don't get people rapsing poetic about running.
No.
Swimming is a different animal. And I've just been hearing from swimmers all over the country. And when I did my Hellespont swim, met up with swimmers from all over the world who just love being in the water. There's something primitive. There's something primal about it. You know, there is the obvious back to the womb, although somebody said to me, I don't want to go back there. So it's not just that, but it's a pretty special experience.
More phone calls momentarily. The author of Swim, Why We Love the Water, Lynn Scherer, is our guest. She is a broadcast journalist, award-winning broadcast journalist, and she's written a number of other books. She worked for ABC News, and she has written Tall Blondes, a book about giraffes, Outside the Box, a memoir, and Failure is Impossible, Susan B. Anthony in her own words. Back to you momentarily. Did I give you the number? I always forget. I'll do it again. 800-486-8255. 855-616-1655. The email talk@WPR.org. You can also share your swimming stories on Facebook, because heavens knows I would love to see those. I would love to see your swimming stories. Or great places. Oh, yeah. Great places to swim in the greater Milwaukee area. Or, you know, the greater Wisconsin area, too. Wouldn't that be a good list for us to put together? That's, so go to the Kathleen Dent Show and we'll get such a list. Great swimming holes. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. We return to your phone calls. Marcy in Eau Claire. Hi.
Hi, thank you so much for taking my call. I am so enjoying this conversation. It brings back so many memories of when I was a child. My parents were non-swimmers, made us take lessons at a local Golden Lake, and I enjoyed it so much, and I grew up in the water. I had piano lessons at a lake that was 5 miles from my house, the woman lived, and we used to bike there every day during summer just to swim. If I would have spent as much time practicing piano as I did biking out to that place to swim, I probably would have been a great pianist. But it's been such a part of my life, and not really competitively, just enjoying it. Finally, my mother, who lives in my lower level, I was doing some triathlons, and then I gained some weight. I'm doing them again, and I'm going to do them with my son in fall. So I had to get back in the water, which I love, but I just had been away from it for a while. So I took my elderly mom to the local indoor pool, and for $2, she got to go in as a senior, and she'd never been much of a swimmer. And I last week I took her, this week I said, I can't. And she said, well, I'm going to go on my own.
Ooh,
so it's just amazing. Swimming, it's just the euphoria of diving in the water. It's just a beautiful thing. So I'm really enjoying your program.
Thanks, Marcy.
Oh, good for you. And you are ageless and weightless in the water, which is pretty magical.
Yes, it is. Where else can you experience that? Nowhere.
And nowhere I love, by the way, nowhere. And Kathleen, I love that you're inviting people to share their stories on your webpage, which is great. And I would also invite people to come to Facebook / swim the book, because we're also collecting stories there, and we're happy to link up with you and
share all
kinds of stuff.
Oh, wonderful. All right. So it's Facebook swim the book.
Swim the book.
Swim the book.
Right. Okay. Facebook / swim the book.
All
right.
We have a Facebook question, and this is a good one. Those of us who have some problems with chlorine, what tips do you have for dealing with chlorine?
The major tip is the minute you get out of the water, just get under the shower or get into fresh water immediately, because soap will help, shampoo will help. It really does work just fine. But just get the chlorine out of your hair and off of your body, and then just use whatever your favorite cream is. And it's funny, I was at an event, and somebody was interviewing Michael Phelps just before I spoke to him. And she works for some cosmetic website. And she said, what's your favorite cream for your skin? And I thought, oh, God, Michael Phelps is going to tell her to get out of there. And he answered. And he had an answer. He's got a favorite cream. The point is, anybody who swims regularly knows that you need to restore your skin and your hair after you've been. Just find your favorite product. There is one kind of shampoo that's supposed to remove chlorine very quickly, and you can find it on the web. I find that just any good shampoo will do it, and I have not had any problem. My blonde hair has not turned green. So just use whatever product you want, but immediately in the water, into fresh water, shower, and then use conditioner, use cream. It really works just fine.
Thank you. Thanks, Marcy. Robert in Milwaukee. Hi.
Hello. I have a question. One of the problems that I have with swimming is that I get kind of bored going back and forth.
Mm-hmm.
I like to bicycle also, and of course, bicycling, one is seeing the scenery and feeling the wind, and it seems less boring than the swimming. The boring might be related to the relaxation also. But I've seen on the internet various kinds of underwater headphones advertised, and I'm wondering if you could comment on the practicality of those, along with perhaps an MP3 player to maybe even listen to public radio while swimming.
Thank you for the question. Yes, I actually own a little waterproof housing for my iPad Nano, and I've used it, and it works just fine. I discovered that I did not like listening to music. I prefer actually listening to books on my when I swim.
Really?
Because
really?
It keeps me interested. But, and by the way, there was a period many, many years ago, back in the days of Sony Walkman, when I would, in my outdoor pool, listen to the Mets playing baseball. And I had a little FM AM radio. Here's the problem. I think many of them do work. Pick your favorite one. There's one that attaches. It doesn't attach. There's one that instead of earphones that go into your ear, it sort of sits on your temples and or on the ear bone. And that's supposed to be more comfortable. I find them all reasonably comfortable, but I don't like having something plugged into me or stuck on my head while I'm swimming. I'm a swimmer who would prefer to be naked, and I wear bathing suits because, of course, I have to, and goggles and a cap. But I find that it interferes with my sense of bliss, to quote the earlier caller in. And I find that I'm happier thinking, and I'm happier working things out. I've written some of my best leads while I'm in the water. I've come up with solutions to problems. But if indeed you prefer to listen to either music or the radio or a book, yes, indeed, waterproof earphones work fine. There are a number of companies that make them. You can get a waterproof housing for your iPod or whatever MP3 player you have, or you can do the one that just rests on your ear bone, and they're all available, and absolutely try it. Mm-hmm. I think you might enjoy it.
Oh, this has been so much fun. Thank you, Lynn. I do, and I will take you up on this. I hope you'll take me up on this. Come to Milwaukee. We'll go swim. I would really love it. Thank you.
You're on.
All right,
and thank
good.
You. And thanks to all your great listeners, because I loved the phone calls.
Yeah, aren't they marvelous? They're great listeners. Lynn Sherr, you spell her last name, S-H-E-R-R. Swim, Why We Love the Water. Go to her Facebook page, Swim the Book, and go to our Facebook page. And thanks to Cynthia Schuster for producing and Rhonda Fanning.